Meet Reed Lance Rosenthal, rancher, number one best-selling award-winning author, and unabashedly, unapologetically, on the right side of the outstanding issues of our generation. But don't try to fence him in. Sometimes his positions will surprise you, because Reed is definitely his own man, with his own opinions. You might love him, you might hate him, but you won't be able to stop listening. Step over to the right side with Reed.
Happy Saturday, folks. It's Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio, the last Saturday in February 2016. And been quite a month. I don't know if you guys saw the debates over the last week or two. it's pretty amusing. Hillary lying her pillory off. I mean, she's just unbelievable. Bernie waving around, hair flying in the breeze. He looks like that guy on Back to the Future, you know, after he stuck his hand in the socket. Well, I'm not going to talk about the Democrats today, other than a little tidbit on Obama, which will probably make your eyes cross, or maybe by this time not. But I am going to give you quite a show. So I'm going to follow up. By the way, I got loads of comments on last week's show on the death of Justice Scalia, the real workings of the Supreme Court, the actual cases that this is going to impact, and the theory that his death was not accidental, with a whole lot of bullet points, more of which are coming out. I might even do a follow-up show. So thanks to the many, many, many of you who wrote on that. A scary deal. Yes, and the fate of the Republic hangs in the balance. But I'm going to keep going, kind of on a different tangent, but along the lines of the Supreme Court, because I just can't tell you how critical this is. So, you know, it is not Justice Scalia's death alone that we have to be concerned about. Now, he's the fifth vote on a 5-4 court. Justice Kennedy, who was appointed, in fact, by Senior Bush back there in the 90s, Justice Kennedy, he can swing either way. You know, he's probably the most moderate of all the justices and kind of calls it as he sees it. Sometimes I agree with him quite a bit, and sometimes I don't. But I'm going to give you some history because, you know, the Democrats and the Republicans, the political nonsense that's going on over this now vacant and critically important Supreme Court seat is in the moment. But there's a much bigger picture when it comes to this court. At least two of the justices will either not live out their term or will highly likely have to retire because of age and health reasons. Both of those justices over the next 4 years, including Ruth Ginsburg, whom you've heard about in the news many times, and who was, ironically, Scalia's good friend, even though she votes absolutely positively, except for one instance, or one set of instances, with the liberal part of the court. I mean, she believes in big government, and government is the nanny state. However, she did side with the court in several of the decisions over the last 2 years when they slapped down Barack Obama's executive orders and his recess appointment to the National Labor Relations Board when the Senate was not in recess. He tried to say it was. He appointed the National Labor Relations Board, which were all union stooges, and the Supreme Court slapped him down 9-0. There was another executive order that he got slapped down 9-0. And his executive orders, I think, are, you know, it's so blatantly unconstitutional that even the liberals can't go along with it. But my point is that there's going to be not only the empty seat that exists, but at least two and perhaps three seats that come up over the next 4 years. And that's assuming just the natural course. I mean, As we saw with Scalia, whether you believe his death was of natural causes, as they are telling us. By the way, did you notice how quickly that went out of the news? Doesn't that make you just a little suspicious? This is probably one of the three most powerful men in the United States, and the only man that could stand in the way of Barack Obama. He dies, and like 5 days later, there's like not a peep. You know, that just gets my little red flags going. It gets my antenna waving. You need to go, if you didn't listen to it, please go back and listen to last week's show. I put a lot of research into it. You will know more about the Supreme Court, how it works, how it functions, what cases are in play right now, what their importance are, and what cases are affected by Scalia's death, including cases that had already been heard, than 99% of the population. And I think you'll enjoy it, and it'll certainly make you think. But with three seats coming up, two liberal seats, and this one conservative seat, think about this. Now, if a Democrat, and there are no Democrats, they're just progressives. I mean, you know, actually, with Bernie, they're progressive socialist communists. I mean, I don't know what they are, but they ain't your daddy's Democrats no more. If Democrats get a hold of the White House, not only would they appoint a liberal, leftist, law-making rather than constitution-following justice, they would be able to appoint at least two more and maintain that what would then be a liberal 5-4 majority. Now, if a Republican, a conservative, gets in the White House, just the opposite happens, folks. Think about this and how important it is to not only us, those of you listening, but to our kids and grandkids. A conservative president would have the opportunity to appoint at least three conservative justices to this court. You would no longer be in a situation where there are swing votes, where things teeter from 5-4 to 4-5, time after time after time, with very few exceptions. You would actually have a Supreme Court that would be 6-3 or 7-2. In other words, you could get conservative things done in this government. You could start scaling back this government, its regulations, its agencies, its overreach, its executive orders, more or less permanently, as the founders intended. So there's a hell of a lot riding on this election. And I'm going to digress just a bit. You know, I watched this last Republican debate, and I listened to the pundits afterwards. I listened to, CNN. I listened to a number of the other AM radio talk shows. And I listened to Fox, and I even managed to listen for a while to MSNBC. So I got a lot of different viewpoints, but the theme was the same. Rubio kicked butt. Cruz had a good night. Donald got pummeled. You know, Ben Carson was funny, but he doesn't matter. And, like, nobody even mentioned Kasich. Well, let me tell you what I think happened to that debate. I think, actually, Donald Trump won that debate. I think that people didn't like, other than people don't like Trump anyway. He doesn't have their vote. I don't think people like the obvious tag team, the prearranged tag team, let's face it, going on between Rubio and Cruz. And I think a close second was Kasich. I thought Kasich had a great night, and I've always liked him. He's a steady hand. He has experience. I think he's an honest guy. He's compassionate. I'm not sure, to be honest with you, he's tough enough to run against the Hillary Clinton nasty machine. And she is nasty, and her machine is nasty, and the Democratic Party is incredibly nasty. But here's my point. I don't see this debate like any of the people I listen to. I mean, I have not heard this opinion, and I've listened to a lot, and I've read a bunch of stuff here in the last day preparing for this show. In my mind, Donald Trump really upped his votes in that debate. And I think Rubio, at best, put Cruz in the dust. I don't think he touched Trump in terms of votes. I mean, he had some good zingers, and Trump, I thought, had the best zinger of the night. You guys have never created a job. He's exactly right. None of those other guys there, other than Kasich, has ever created a job. Kasich was in private industry in between his many government stints, Ohio governor now, national security, congressman, you name it. And the other thing that struck me was, I had liked Rubio up to that night. I really didn't like the Rubio I saw. Strident. He kind of reminded me of a rat terrier biting at a Newfoundland or biting at a German Shepherd. I can't really explain it. And I thought Cruz, let me put it this way. I'm going to be voting in the Wyoming caucuses on Monday night. So I have kept my mouth shut, even though I have had hundreds of emails asking me for who I am going to endorse or who I am going to vote for. And I'm going to tell you right now that as of this moment, my vote is between Donald Trump and John Kasich. I don't like Cruz. I don't particularly trust him. It's one thing about being tougher than nails. It's another thing about fighting dirty. And Rubio probably would have been my second choice, or my even Steven for first choice with Trump as of a week ago. After watching him in that debate, I've kind of changed my mind. And the concerted attack that the PACs are doing against Trump and Rubio and Cruz are doing against Trump, I don't like it. I think what they're doing nothing but weakening the candidate that eventually is going to represent the conservative side. And besides a million other things, which is absolutely critical to our health, our safety, our welfare, our security, our finances, the Constitution and American values, and in fact, America in this dangerous world. I mean, we simply can't afford this nonsense of the Republican establishment, which I'm going to get into in a moment with the Supreme Court, has got to stop. I am disgusted with the Republican establishment. I mean, disgusted. Okay, sorry for the diatribe there, but I thought it was important to kind of tell you my points and explain to you just one of the reasons, and one of the really big reasons, why getting a conservative in the White House, even if it's not the perfect conservative, is absolutely mandatory. I mean, it's past critical. So let's take a look at this court. I've told you about what people aren't talking about, very few are, and that is, this isn't just one justice at stake, folks. This is at least three, could be four. Who knows what's going to happen to some other justice? And if my surmise about Justice Scalia's death being less than accidental is correct, if they get away with it once, they might try and get away with it again. If I were the other conservative justices on that court, I would go nowhere without my U.S. Marshals. In fact, I'd double them. Remember, the left, look at Lenin, look at Stalin, look at Mao, look at Pol Pot. The left will do whatever it takes to further its ideology. The ends justify the means, Saul Alinsky. So the other things that we need to think about on this court is, you know, the UN climate treaty. I didn't have a chance to get into this last week, which ran way over. In fact, I think it was about 25 minutes on the adjunct show past the AM. Well, it was a lot of information. Please do listen to it if you haven't. So climate, the climate change deal. You know, this Paris Accord, which is nothing more than a redistribution of wealth from the wealthier countries in the world to the poorer countries in the world, engineered by Barack Obama. Remember his three watchwords, guys. Reparations, retribution, and social justice. That is what he is about. Not only between Americans, but between America and the rest of the world. And if he can get the other colonial, those nasty colonial European powers in there writing checks too, he loves it. And that's going to be a whole nother battle before the Supreme Court. Because remember, a treaty must be ratified by the Senate. He's just calling it a climate pact or a climate agreement. But he's trying to spend billions of our dollars or ship billions of our dollars to other countries around the world to affect it. The whole key to that Paris Accord, so to speak, was the less developed countries to wean themselves off of fossil fuels and to avoid getting hooked on fossil fuels and to go to alternative energy must have hundreds of billions of dollars from the developed nations to take up the slack in their economy while they did all this wonderful thing to save the earth. My foot. How many of those dollars do you think are going to get to some person in a Kenyan village or a Ghana town? I mean, they'll be scooped up in crony capitalism and fraud and corruption just as fast as they're scooped up in Washington, D.C. Now, Obama's playing some games with this appointment. You know, he has a whole bunch of things he can do here. Mitch McConnell, who's a moron. One of the stupidest things Mitch McConnell said, and what has hurt the Senate Republicans when they were in the minority up to almost two years ago now, when they were in the minority, and now that they're in the majority, was when Barack Obama got elected. You probably remember this. Mitch McConnell was stupid enough to say the following. My first goal is to get Barack Obama out of office. Now, everything that the Senate Republicans did from that point on was tainted by that stupid, irrational, absolutely unnecessary comment. If it was 100% true, and it probably was, it's not something that you voice. It's like that moron, that Republican moron in Congress who was trying to be Speaker of the House before it went to Ryan, who stood up on a Fox TV, I happened to see it live, who stood up on a Fox TV interview and said, well, nobody said we could get to Hillary, but, you know, we're getting to her with this Benghazi committee, which undid a year and a half worth of work by Trey Gowdy of being incredibly careful to not go anywhere near the political aspect of the Benghazi investigation. I mean, in 1 second, this guy demolished a year and a half's worth of work, undercut the credibility of the... it's just unbelievable. I mean, it's just unbelievable. And then Mitch McConnell strikes again. 2 hours after hearing about Scalia's death, I mean, you know, the body was just getting the embalming, the rushed embalming fluid so there'd be no blood to be tested. Listen to my show last week. Mitch McConnell comes out and says, we're not approving anybody that Barack Obama brings up. What a stupid thing to say. And once again, it taints any and all efforts of the Republicans to delay this nomination so that the next president, hopefully a conservative or a moderate conservative, at least a Republican, can make the appointments. I mean, it's almost like it's on purpose. I mean, you just can't be that stupid. Then, after saying that, then he starts backtracking. Obama comes out and says, okay, well, I'm going to send up the nomination, and you have to act on it. I'm going to give you the actual facts here, folks, the actual history, because the Democrats are absolutely lying through their teeth about it. And the Republicans, who can't seem to ever get out a public message that makes any sense, haven't said squat. So I'm going to bring you up to speed, because that's my job. So Barack Obama, and then he floats out Sandoval, the government, the Republican governor of Michigan. Moderate, you know, moderate. Kind of a Kennedy type, to be honest with you. Sandoval, of course, said he didn't want anything to do with it. But Barack Obama could float out Loretta Lynch. He's kind of floated that out there to see what people would say, because, you know, the Senate are lovely Republican senators, already confirmed her, and she's as much an ideologue, although much more clever about it, than that traitorous Eric Holder, and of course her boss Barack Obama. So Mitch McConnell has put the Republicans behind the eight ball on the extremely important goal of not allowing Barack Obama to appoint anybody unless it happens to be Scalia's conservative brother. And even then, I wouldn't trust it. I mean, it's scary how stupid these people are. Donald Trump is right. In the case of the Republicans, I hope, they're just stupid. In the case of Barack Obama, he's brilliant and it's intentional. And, you know, if you put brilliant and intentional against just stupid, guess who's going to win? So Barack Obama's plan on this, remember, the progressives like the word nudge. You just move things forward and forward a little bit at a time. So his first goal is to get a nominee in that will put the Republicans in a quandary. You've already had Mark Kirk, scurrilous Republican, the rhino that he is from Illinois, say, oh, you know, I think that we ought to have a committee hearing, and then we should have a vote on the floor. I mean, this guy cares less about America than his re-election in Illinois. Why don't we put him on the treason trial list? And any other Republican senator that says any moronic thing, anything like it. But Barack Obama thinks he can peel off six or seven moron, more concerned about themselves, Republicans, and get this thing to a 51, 49, 50 whatever vote. Remember, the Republicans only have 57 votes. You don't have to peel off a whole lot of them. You peel off seven, and there's a tie vote. And guess who that's decided by? The Vice President of the United States, Mr. Biden. There's other things going on, too, called reconciliation, which is whether it's 60 votes or 50 votes. I don't want to get in the weeds with you. I might bring that up in a future show as this thing evolves. We find out now that McConnell and Ryan are going up to the White House to sit down with the president to talk about this nomination. What is this? Seriously? How about this, Paul and Mitch, who are supposed to be representing the people? How about this? How about, you know, Mr. President, we're not going to meet with you over anything. You have the right under the Constitution to send down your nominee, and we have the right to advise and consent. And there's no time limit on that, and history backs us up, as does the Constitution. And you do your job, and we'll do our job. You do your job whenever you want, and we'll do our job whenever we want. And just play this smart for once, Mitch and Paul. You went up there to meet with the president? What kind of deals were cut on that crap? This is outrageous. I mean, you know. Wow. I could foam at the mouth. You know, it's one thing to know your enemy, because nothing they do really surprises you, i.e. Barry and crew. It's another thing to think you have, well, I'd be loath to call them friends, shall we say tenuous allies, and they stab you in the back. Just outrageous. All right, you know, the next thing that's going to be coming up on this court this year is this NRLB thing. I told you about it. So in the end, Obama, after he got slapped down by the Supreme Court, was successful in getting that that board stacked with three very pro-union, very left folks against two Republicans. And they have passed some horrendous decisions. You've heard about them in the news. You know, Boeing can't move its plant. I mean, just, you know, this is like stuff out of Russia. Well, guess what? 26 states have passed the right to work law. Remember, we've talked about on these shows. You can put it in the search bar and you can listen to them. Right to work is not has nothing to do with whether or not you have the right to join a union or you have to be in a union if you're in a union shop. That stays, yes, if you're in a union shop, you have to be a member of the union. It has to do with the right of the union. By the way, using government administration and U.S. tax dollar payments, to extract from your check without your say your monthly dues, and then to use those dues without any input by you, however they want to do it, whether it's patting their fat cat top of the union chain pockets or contributing to candidates which disgust you, who believe in and promulgate policies which are against your religion, against your values, against your belief, against your children, against your security. That's what right to work is about. 26 states have now passed it. And there's a case coming up to the Supreme Court which could nullify the votes of those 26 states. It centers around the 10th Amendment, which is the rights of the states to decide their own stuff. Part of the Bill of Rights, I might add. The first 10 amendments is the Bill of Rights. So that's a huge case that's coming up there. We talked about the immigration last week. You know, there's more BS coming from the various agencies, both Homeland Security and the EPA. I mean, critical cases that will affect your everyday rights, your everyday finances, and your everyday security. You know, one of the best ways Obama can ensure his legacy is to get that court 5-4 liberal. And remember, if a conservative president is elected and Mitch and Ryan hold the line, then the next president, if a Republican, has a great chance to get that court on conservative footing for years with a decisive conservative majority. However, the converse is also true. If you get a liberal president in there, if you get Hillary, heaven forbid, then it'll go to the highest bidder. Or Bernie, heaven forbid, he'll probably recruit somebody out of Cuba. Then just the opposite happens. That court could go for decades to 6-3 or 7-2 liberal. Do you have any idea what would happen to your Second Amendment rights? Do you have any idea what would happen to the cost of electricity because suddenly shutting down coal, tampering with natural resources, controlling business would be okay? Those of you in union shops who listen to me, who favor right to work, in other words, you don't mind being part of the union, you think the union's good, but you don't want money taken out of your pocket without your say every month. And to the extent you do want to contribute funds, you can, but you have a say in how they're spent. This is, as the Democrats like to say, a democracy. Just think about all the things that would affect your daily life and your basic and fundamental rights under the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, folks. It is really a scary deal. Let me tell you, a scary deal. Now, one of the things Republicans, the Democrats, argue is that, the Senate must the Senate must consent, and the Senate must have a vote. This is all nonsense. And they try and obfuscate, as they do very well, the facts. Here's the facts for you as to what has historically happened when there is a vacancy in the last year of a presidency. A two-term presidency, because if it's one term, obviously that president could run again. Of a two-term presidency. And this has been the case for 80 years. And before that, it was the case, except for that one break 80 years ago, for 120 years. I would say that it is a hell of a precedent. And one of the things that these people, these hypocritical, nasty people, I mean, God, it's unbelievable. Joe Biden's been up there saying the Republicans have to vote, and Chuck Schumer, who I can't stand, from New York, has been up there saying that the Republicans have to vote, and of course Obama's been saying the, and you know what's been dug up, and you can see it, you can Google them up and listen to them in their own words. Barack Obama in 2006. This was 2 years before an election. Filibustered one of George Bush's appointees 2 years ahead, using the argument that he'd be out of office in 2 years. He filibustered it and voted against it. Did everything he could to delay it, to make sure there wasn't a vote. That's what the filibuster is about, to make sure it doesn't go to a vote. Joe Biden in 1992, George Bush Sr., you know, George Bush 41, about 2 years, maybe a little bit longer, two and a quarter years before the end of his term, there a vacancy arose on the Supreme Court. He immediately sent up a nominee. The nominee got thrown out, which happened to be, by the way, a black conservative. It got thrown out by the Democrats. You know, maybe they were racist. Anyway, he then sent up another nominee. It's now like a year and a half out on this process that started more than 2 years before he was to leave office. That nominee got thrown out by the very Democrats, by the way, who are now saying you have to vote, you have to approve, you don't even get the dissent. And finally, he brings up Justice Kennedy, whom I've discussed earlier in the show. Swing guy. You never quite know where he's going to come down. I think he comes down more often on the side of the Constitution than he doesn't, but there's some notable exceptions. He's an unknown, which is better than a Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who is a known lefty. So, if you follow this to its conclusion, Kennedy finally got, and because he was very moderate, finally got confirmed about 9 months before George Bush Sr. left office, since he lost the election to Bill Clinton. But the process had started before, there was still more than 2 years left in his term. In other words, it was the same empty seat, the third attempt at nominations. I mean, it was an ongoing process. And Joe Biden stood up and said that George Walker Bush, and this was 19 months, this was after the first nomination was voted down by the Democrats, 19 months before Bush was going up for re-election. He wasn't even leaving office. It wasn't even his second term. He couldn't serve anymore, like Obama. Before Bush leaving office, because it was 19 months, that he shouldn't even bring a nominee, and if he did bring a nominee, the Judiciary Committee shouldn't give the hearing to the nominee, and if the judicial committee did do a hearing, then the Senate shouldn't vote. This is Joe Biden, who's now saying exactly the opposite under much more tenuous circumstances. The same with Harry Reid. Of course, we know he's a lying, corrupt, whatever he is. There are a number of terms I could use. He should have married Hillary Clinton. Oh, man. Anyway. So all these people. And Chuck Schumer, by the way. Chuck Schumer also did the same thing. Year and a half before George Bush is leaving office, Chuck Schumer is standing up saying, we shouldn't even have a hearing. We shouldn't even consider a nominee. Now he's stridently saying how the Republicans must do this and must... All right, you know, you can chuck some of this down to politics, but I think these morons, and they're all morons in this one. I mean, do they think we don't have this video? It's black and white. It's not gray. Go Google it up. Google up Schumer against Supreme Court nominee, or Biden against Supreme Court nominee, or Barack Obama Supreme Court filibuster. Harry Reid opposes Supreme Court nominee. I mean, just listen to him. It's unbelievable. Okay. So, look. Here's the bottom line. No nominee of Barack Obama can be appointed to this court. Now, I'm sure Barry, who's way smarter, certainly than McConnell, and perhaps in some ways with Ryan, although Ryan's no slouch. I'm sure he's telling him, well, you know, Donald Trump might get the nomination, and then Donald Trump, you know, you don't know who he's going to really appoint, and that's if he wins, but you know that if he gets the nomination, he'll probably lose. And if you don't agree to this moderate lefty that I want to put up right now, of course, the person is not really a moderate lefty. He's just going to play being a moderate lefty during the confirmation hearings. If you don't approve this moderate lefty, just think about what could happen. And he's going to tell him exactly what I told you here 10 minutes ago. Instead of controlling one of three appointments, Mitch and Paul, you wouldn't have any control over all three. So you're way ahead. Having some control, some limited control that out of the goodness of my progressive heart, I'm going to afford you, snicker, snicker, on this one nominee and letting him go through to hedge your bets against Donald Trump losing the election to Hillary. I mean, I guarantee you that's what's being said. And here's what's scary. I guarantee you they're listening to it. So one of the things you can do is you can write your congressman and you can write your senators, I mean tomorrow, and you keep the letters going, folks, or call them or email them. Do whatever you have to do, and you tell them, no way, Jose. Forget it. In the words of the Gladiator, I'm sure many of you saw that movie. Do you remember that opening scene where the barbarians are coming up the hill and the Romans are in the trees and there's catapults and fireballs, and it's great. One of the greatest opening scenes of any movie. And the Gladiator, and I'm sorry I've misplaced his name, but the general of the Romans, who is a star, of course, of the movie, the Gladiator, he's riding up and down his men, who you can see are really nervous. Hold the line. Hold the line. Do you remember that scene? Fabulous, fabulous scene. That's what you have to tell your senators and your congressmen. And you ought to put it on your calendar. And you can put it something else in the letter too if you got another concern. But this is key. Hold the line. Because these rhinos will sell us out. All right. The real thing that happened, I'm going to go. I want you to have the real history here, because the progressives are lying through their teeth as they normally do. The vacancy that was filled by Justice Kennedy, it opened on June 26, 1987, when Justice Lewis Powell retired. President Reagan at that time nominated Robert Bork. Remember that name, guys? You know, some of you who are older will. Great constitutionalist, by the way. The Senate Democrats signaled their opposition to a Bork nomination. Reagan nominated him anyway, as was his custom. It dragged on for months, and the Democratic-controlled Senate eventually denied Bork's confirmation on October 23, 1987. Reagan announced he would nominate Douglas Ginsburg, but this nomination was withdrawn. And finally, I'm sorry, you know, I was using Bush, it was really Reagan. Finally, Reagan nominated Anthony Kennedy on November 30th, 1987. He was confirmed on February 3rd, 1988. That gives you an idea of how long this process began before Reagan's departure. The same thing, by the way, happened with George Herbert Bush. I always get them confused. George Herbert Bush, you know, Bush 41. And the same thing happened with Bush 43. I mean, it's a never-ending pattern. The Democrats just gum up the works, refuse to hear, refuse to nominate, refuse to give hearings to. And I'm talking about like 2 or 3 years before the end of the president's term. But the Republicans are now expected in the last 8 months of Barry's term to jump right to it and confirm his nomination.